Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I have a very special guest today, Diana Ploss. She'll have much to say about many different issues. I'm going to begin with an update of what's going on here in Gaza. 23% of 383 Israeli armored vehicles have been destroyed in the last 5 days. In other words, Hamas is putting up one hell of a fight. Based on recent satellite images from northwest Gaza, it appears the Israeli army has sustained substantial losses, with 88 armored vehicles reported missing over 5 days. This accounts for approximately 23% of the 383 vehicles that could be seen in the area via satellite imagery. Hamas appears to be using a sophisticated, improved version of rocket-propelled grenades that have a fuse that penetrates through the armor before it explodes, making it especially lethal. So how are the Israelis going to respond? Well, we saw it coming when the siege was imposed, cutting off food, water, fuel, and electricity. Remember, there are infants in incubators who died because the electricity was cut off. Remember the rule of threes. You can survive 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. Well, Mike Adams reporting, genocide by starvation. Israel's bombing operation have exhausted the food supply in Gaza. This is authored by Bell Carter. Since Israel launched a full siege on Gaza on October 9th as retaliation for the violent Hamas attack 2 days prior, which, by the way, as I've explained, appears to have been orchestrated by Bibi Netanyahu, and where Israeli forces themselves used Apache helicopters to slaughter Jews to run up the death toll. The blockade, it imposed cut off food, water, fuel, electricity, and other necessities to the besieged enclave. Following more than 30 days of nonstop attacks, resources have been exhausted. Generators can no longer function due to lack of fuel, and even emergency food supplies are no longer available. Thousands of Palestinian civilians have been trapped in the enclave, since then and are facing starvation, which has particularly impacted the elderly, the sick, and the young. People are becoming frustrated by lack of food and unsanitary conditions. Of course, that's part of the plan. These fanatic genocidalists who believe that Israel is superior, that Jews are superior to all other races, are going nonstop. Meanwhile, we have a report of rain falling on Gaza. Think of the dispossessed people under the rain without any shelter. Think of people trapped under the rubble. They might drown under the rain. This is a report on Twitter about it. Let me say, I'm convinced this is weather warfare. In other words, this rain isn't just merely coincidental. It just happened by accident or coincidence. It's deliberately contrived. And think what's going to happen to the tunnels beneath Gaza. They could be flooded. This is an all-out savage attack. They want to kill every last Palestinian, or at the very least remove them from the lands of Palestine, which were theirs for 3,000 years before the Israelis arrived 75 years ago. And remember, bear in mind, modern-day occupants of Israel are not descendants of the tribe of Judah. They are Khazarians. They descend from a region that is modern-day Ukraine. DNA studies have confirmed, which is why they fought so fiercely for Ukraine to become the new Israel. Now, for a combination of reason, being frustrated over the loss of the war against Russia and incited by the discovery of massive gas and oil reserves off the coast of Gaza and wanting to build a Ben-Gurion canal right through the heart of Gaza, they're undertaking an all-out effort to obliterate every building in Gaza. They had to do this as an urban excavation in order to prepare the way for what they want to do, which will be to annex Gaza. Bibi has already given speeches where he showed a map showing no Gaza, no West Bank. That's the plan. Meanwhile, we have attacks on the last remaining hospital in northern Gaza, the Al-Sharif Hospital, that are ongoing. Death and devastation just abound. 2 days ago, the injured left Al-Sharif Hospital with wounds still bleeding, some on wheelchairs, some pulled by cart. Those who arrived in the south a few days ago reported that Al-Sharif's hospital administration had urged them to flee since it would no longer be operational by now. It has completely closed down. These directives did not come out of nowhere. They were based on the hospital administration's expectation of what would transpire during the ground invasion. Given Israel's systematic policy of targeting medical facilities, in the days leading up to the Al-Sharif exodus, Israel forces continued to close in, bombing and shelling the neighborhood buildings and other parts of the hospital, launching missiles into the hospital courtyard where refugees were sleeping, cutting them up into pieces. This is an all-out assault, utterly in violation of human rights, grotesque violations of international law, Geneva Convention, Hague Convention. The Israelis don't care. Their attitude is that they are following God's law and that God's law entitles them to slaughter those who are non-Jews. They believe it. And if you look at the Old Testament, there's ample reason to believe genocides are taking place right and left. Their God is a God of vengeance, very unlike the Christian God of love and compassion and mercy. Similarly for Islam, which regards Jesus Christ as a prophet, a great moral leader, the Jews of this virulent variety, Talmudic Jews, however, despise Christ, felt it was justifiable to crucify him, have horrible things to say about Christians whom they hold in special contempt. Well, get this. It turns out that that hospital harbored a secret command and control base. Why reporters won't talk about it? The idea that one of Hamas' main command bunkers is located beneath a Sharif hospital in Gaza City is one of the worst kept secrets of the Gaza war. So why aren't reporters in Gaza ferreting it out? The precise location of a large underground bunker equipped with sophisticated communication equipment and housing some part of the leadership of what they're calling here a major terrorist organization. Of course, remember, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Underneath a major hospital, but seemed to qualify as a world-class scoop, the kind that might win a Pulitzer. So why is it the fact that Hamas uses Sharif Hospital as a command post making headlines? In part, it's because the location is so unsecret that Hamas regularly meets with reporters there. On July 15, for example, William Booth of the Washington Post wrote that the hospital, quote, has become a de facto headquarters for Hamas leaders who can be seen in the hallways and offices. Back in 2006, PBS even aired a documentary showing how gunmen roam the halls of the hospital, intimidate the staff, deny them access to protected location within the building, where the camera crew is obviously prohibited from filming. Yet, the confirmation Hamas is using Gaza's biggest hospital is at de facto headquarters was made in the first sentence of the 8th paragraph of Booth's story, what appeared to be the kind of rookie mistake known in journalistic parlance as burying the lead. But get this. Turns out that the Israelis know about it because it was the Israelis who constructed the site, believe it or not. Meanwhile, Mike King has offered a very concise overview of the history of oppression in Palestine. Listen carefully to this short take that covers a lot of territory. Here it comes. RealNewsInHistory.com.
Current developments in the Middle East offer us a good teachable moment for a chronological crash course, 10-point summary of the Israel-Palestine conflict. Know these few key points, and you'll be way ahead of most people when it comes to understanding this seemingly complex, but actually quite simple historical topic. We begin in 70 AD, having had enough of Jewish intrigue, agitation, and ambush attacks upon their soldiers, the Romans sack Jerusalem and expel the surviving rebellious Babylonian Jews from their homeland province of Judea. The scattered remnants settle throughout the Middle East, Southern Europe, and North Africa. The 700s, Jewish rabbis convert the ruling class of the pagan Khazarian Empire, based mainly in what is today Ukraine and southwest Russia. The masses of this Near Asian people, today acknowledged as the Ashkenazim supermajority of Jews, soon follows. The mass conversion greatly enhances the ranks of what had been a dying Judaism. These new Jews, along with other North African converts known as Sephardics, will remain true to their religion and people long after the Russian Empire busts up the Khazarian Empire in the 960s. 1000 through the 1800s, throughout the Middle Ages and beyond, the troublesome wandering Khazars and olive-skinned Sephardic Jews are expelled from over 100 kingdoms or nations, including major states such as England, two times, France, Spain, and Portugal, and they are persecuted in many others, Prussia, Russia, Poland, Austria, etc. The usual complaints against them include coin clipping, usurious money lending, undue influence in the affairs of state, disrespect for Christianity, hostility toward their hosts, sacrificial murders of Christian children, and poisoning of wells. The late 1800s. Khazarian Zionists, with no ancestral link whatsoever to the Jews of Roman Empire times, begin a movement to establish a Jewish homeland in Arab-dominated Palestine, which at this time is under the jurisdiction of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. The Zionist movement's nominal leader is Theodor Herzl. But the real bosses are the men of the infamous House of Rothschild. 1890 to 1914, over a period of about 15 years, and with the permission of Turkey, the advance guard of European Jewry, totaling no more than 40,000, arrive and settle, mainly as farmers, in Palestine. Neither the Turks nor the local Arabs seem to understand that this low-level Aliyah, as it was called, represents, by design, the camel's nose under the tent. 1917, that's the long, planned Great War to restructure the world, breaks down into a stalemate, but with Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Turkey holding the advantage, the opportunistic Zionist leaders approached the British with a dirty deal. The scheme, which later took form in the 1917 Balfour Declaration, promises that the Zionists, who own American President Woodrow Wilson, will bring the mighty United States into the war on Britain's side. The price which Britain must pay is to take over Palestine from Turkey after the war and allow the Jews of Europe to migrate there in large numbers in preparation for an eventual Jewish state. Between the World Wars, 1919 and 1939, Jews from Europe flood into British-ruled Palestine over the objections of the Arab majority, who now see what the game is. But immigration to Palestine is not enough. The Zionists want a sovereign nation for themselves. Post-World War II years, 1945 to 1948, using the pretext of Jewish suffering during the World War II, the so-called Holocaust, the Zionist desire for an actual nation turns into Zionist demands, backed up by murderous acts of terror against both British rulers and the Arab locals. Palestine is partitioned by the United Nations in 1947, and Israel is declared as a state in 1948. The United States, the United Kingdom, and the Soviet Union are quick to recognize the new nation. 1948 to 1967, Arab wars against aggressor Israel and domestic uprisings among Palestinians not only fail to dislodge the new American-armed criminal state, but result in Israel acquiring more and more territory, the ultimate goal being a major expansion of Greater Israel into Syria, Iraq, and even Egypt. So complete is Israel's dominance over the Middle East policy of the United States that the 1967 attempted sinking of the USS Liberty, killing 34 U.S. sailors and injuring 171, goes unreported in the U.S. media. 9/11/2001. Though the Zionist faction of international Jewry is often at odds with the global Marxist faction, after 30 years of staging false flag terror incidents designed to ensnare the U.S. in the region, both elements worked together to stage the false flag attacks of 9/11. The purpose of 9/11 was to blame the Muslims and launch endless wars of expansion in both the Middle East and Central Asia. And that, boys and girls, in a nutshell, is the untold story of the Israeli-Palestine conflict. A sad tale of how a quote-unquote desert, which was actually populated by 700,000 Arabs and hardly any Jews at all, has, over the course of just a little more than one century, transitioned from Palestine into the State of Israel, populated mainly by European Khazarians, whose ancestors, incredibly, had never even set foot in the Syria-Palestina of Roman times. And why exactly is this true story an untold story? It's because members of a certain ethnic group have long dominated American media, finance, Hollywood, book publishing, politics, and academia. And that is the story of the Israel-Palestine complex. Be sure to order the book linked below, The Song That Never Ends, the ultimate Hola Hoax debunk book that the ADL does not want you to read. This is Mike King signing off. Please follow the channel and like this video and share this video. Thank you.
Well, Mike King does a brilliant job. Of course, he runs the anti-New York Times and is very, very good in correcting the record as to what's actually going on here. Here's a very disturbing piece, namely, Israeli war crimes and propaganda follow U.S. blueprint. Israel's war crimes in Gaza and the propaganda by which it justifies them are based on the weak and incorrect interpretation of the Geneva Convention the U.S. has relied on throughout its recent wars. We have both been reporting on and protesting against U.S. war crimes for many years and against identical crimes committed by U.S. allies and proxies like Israel and Saudi Arabia. Illegal use of military force to try to remove enemy governments or regimes, hostile military occupations, disproportionate military violence justified by claims of terrorism, the bombing and killing of civilians, and the mass destruction of whole cities. Most Americans share a general aversion to war, but tend to accept this militarized foreign policy because we are tragically susceptible to propaganda, the machinery of public manipulation that works hand in hand with the machinery of killing to justify otherwise unthinkable horrors. This process of manufacturing consent works in a number of ways. One of the most effective forms of propaganda is silence, simply not telling us and certainly not showing us what war is really doing to the people whose homes and communities have been turned into America's latest battlefield. The most devastating campaign the U.S. military has waged in recent years dropped over 100,000 bombs and missiles on Mosul in Iraq, Raqqa in Syria, and other areas occupied by ISIS or Daesh. An Iraqi Kurdish intelligence report estimated that more than 40,000 civilians were killed in Mosul. Raqqa was even more totally destroyed. The shelling of Raqqa was the heaviest U.S. artillery bombardment since the Vietnam War, yet was barely reported in the U.S. corporate media. A recent New York Times article about the traumatic brain injuries and PTSD suffered by U.S. artillerymen operating 155 howitzers, each of which fired up to 10,000 shells into Raqqa, was appropriately cited a secret war. Strange new wounds and silence from the Pentagon. Shrouding such mass death and destruction in secrecy is a remarkable achievement. When British playwright Harold Pinter was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature in 2005, in the midst of the Iraq War, he titled his Nobel speech, Art, Truth, and Politics, and used it to shine light on this diabolical aspect of U.S. war making. After talking about hundreds of thousands of killings in Indonesia, Greece, Uruguay, Brazil, Paraguay, Haiti, Turkey, the Philippines, Guatemala, El Salvador, Chile, and Nicaragua, Pinter asked, did they take place? And are they all cases attributable to U.S. foreign policy? The answer is yes, they did take place. And they are attributable to American foreign policy. But you don't know it. It never happened. Nothing ever happened. Even while it was happening, it wasn't happening. It didn't matter. It was of no interest. The crimes of the United States have been systematic, constant, vicious, remorseless, but very few people have actually talked about them. You have to hand it to America. It's been an exercise. It has exercised a quite clinical manipulation of power worldwide while masquerading as a force for universal good. It's a brilliant, even witty, highly successful act of hypnosis. How right has he got it? Just to, there's a new piece about the real reason for Gaza on YouTube. Okay, we'll see if we can catch a minute or two of it before we hit our break, and I bring in my special guest.
Not long ago, a top-ranked U.S. general said Americans must be ready to fight and die for Israel. So you might be asking yourself, why? Why would we send American soldiers to die in Israel? A friend of mine reminded me of this today, actually, this General Clark. You're probably smart enough to wonder, by now you are, what's the real reason that the United States and Israel are taking over Gaza? Is it really about Hamas, as neocons and Netanyahu would have us believe, or is Hamas the perfect cover to seize control of massive natural gas deposits that Palestinians own and control offshore, off the shore of Gaza and the Gaza Strip? Call me cynical, but I have heard this story before. Western powers using the cover of terrorism to seize control over massive oil and gas resources and oceanfront property so they can build ports. There's a reason we don't give a shit about landlocked Afghanistan. But we are building a second military base in Iraq, and where we're building that military base is right on or right next to Iraqi oil fields. So, of course, I thought we weren't in Iraq anymore. Like, why? And we're now building a second base, but this time it's right near oil fields. So we need to make sure we have control of that oil. Last week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was asked, you know, how long Israeli forces occupy Gaza after it's been destroyed? His response wasn't a surprise to me at all, or anybody watching this show, I'm sure. Watch.
President Biden has said that it would be a mistake for Israel to occupy Gaza. Who should govern Gaza when this is over?
Those who don't want to continue the way of Hamas, and certainly is not, I think Israel will, for an indefinite period, will have the overall security responsibility, because we've seen what happens when we don't have it. When we don't have the responsibility, what we have is the eruption of Hamas terror on a scale that we couldn't imagine.
Yeah, so of course they will occupy it indefinitely, even after Hamas is long gone, because it was never about Hamas in the first place. Wake up. They're playing us like a fiddle once again. They love nothing more than to watch people argue on Twitter. You're an anti-Semite. You're pro-Palestinian. Does Israel have the right to exist? You don't think Israel has a right to exist? What's wrong with you? Stop killing babies.
Be right back with my special guest, Diana Bloss. Stand by.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, my guest today, Diana Ploss, has wide-ranging interests and a keen intellect, and has been most recently working to assist those affected by COVID. Diana, yeah, give us your thoughts about all of the above. That was a pretty nice overview of what's happening in Gaza and with Israel. Your thoughts.
Well, Dr. Fessa, thank you for having me, but keen intellect, that's awesome. That is awesome. So thank you for having me. And it is interesting. I'll just start off by saying every member in my family thinks I'm an anti-Semite. So I'll just start by saying that. So I can't even have these discussions locally because people don't want to talk about it. And my mother, who thinks that the Muslims are going to poison our water because she watches Fox News all day long, she comes home every week with two cases of water because she's afraid that she's not going to have any drinking water in Boston where she lives. So it's a sad state of affairs when you have a group of family members who all supported Donald Trump don't support my right to free speech. So what do you think about that?
Yes. Yeah. I've been disillusioned with Fox since they gave Tucker the boot. I mean, Tucker was a bright voice, brilliant guy. He was drawing $6 million for every show, but he was turning against Ukraine. So I believe that the pressure was put on Fox to get him off because those who are controlling our media are all Israelis, Israeli sympathizers, dual citizens. They don't have the interest of the United States at heart, and they most certainly do not want a major truth teller like Tucker blowing their cover over Ukraine, much less what's going on now in Israel.
So for people who are, I'm looking at your chat, so I'm watching the Rev Radio chat room. And people can take a look and they can look me up, Diana, D-I-A-N-N-A, and my last name is Ploss, P-L-O-S-S. Now, what's interesting is I was looking at your, Dr. Fetzer, your Wikipedia page and the books that you've written. I think I might even be a bigger conspiracy theorist than you are. For example, I do not believe that Tucker, I believe that the Tucker leaving Fox is another one of those sideshows that they want us all to get involved in. I used to believe that the election in 2020 was stolen. Now I believe that was their opportunity to show us that we have zero control over our election system. I used to believe that it was stolen. I believe this time they showed us. They proved it to us. And then I'm going to use this is why people don't like me. I'm going to use this term against to people. And like imbeciles, right, we still participated in the election system, despite the fact that none of these electronic voting machines were removed in any towns and cities across the United States. So what do you think of that, Dr. Fessa?
Well, I think it's fascinating. I believe it was all of the above. You know, they not only wanted to deny Trump the election because he would have continued policies that to them were anathema, but they also wanted to exercise, show their muscle so blatant. I have emphasized again and again, Diana, that we're not going to get anywhere until we can correct the election system where Barack Obama, as among his final acts in office, put the U.S. election system declared to be critical infrastructure under DHS, where they now have the capacity to monitor and even change votes down to the precinct level. So as I put it most colorfully, Diana, the Republicans could run Jesus Christ as their candidate and it'd still lose.
Well, the thing is, I don't believe in the party system. So for people who don't know me, you can just do an internet search and you'll see some of the things that I've been involved in. I used to interview when I had a radio program before they gave me the booth because of something I did, something I said. I used to interview people in the top of the Republican Party. I ran in those circles. I had a membership to the Republican Club down in D.C., which I gave up when I decided I want no part of either one of these wings of the same bird. All they do, in my opinion, the reason they exist is to keep we the people from taking action. That's the only reason. I don't care about the, I think they call it the Freedom Caucus or something. To me, it's all a bunch of bunk. And all you have to do is a little internet search. And you can put in, what's her name, MGT, or what's her name, Marjorie Green Taylor. Put her name in and Israel. Put in Ron Paul and Israel. Put in all of these people in Israel. They all support the same people. They don't support us. They do not support us. It's a charade.
Right. I think it's not quite as bad as you described, but I know a lot who would share your opinion. I mean, look at it this way, Diana. Trump sealed the border. He had it down to a trickle. He made us energy independent. Biden comes in and he opens the border and he cancels the XL pipeline. Trump had a robust economy where those wage earners making the lowest wages were seeing their wages rise at a highest rate. I think these are real differences. And that, therefore, it cannot be quite right that they're both birds, you know, two wings of the same bird. I do agree. The establishment members on both sides share the war economy and the military-industrial complex and the pro-Israel attitudes, which, of course, as far as Israel concerned, is among the issues on which I fault Trump. But in my opinion, he's the only figure with a sufficient following and strength and knowledge to set the ship of state right, if only we could get him back in office again. Your thoughts?
Nah, I don't buy it. I think, right, what do communists do? So when I used to be an activist, and I had the biggest Trump group in the state of Massachusetts. I held Trump, we call them standouts, 10 to 12 a week in 2019. In 2020, okay? So what do communists do? They divide. They had to have Trump having these successes. They had to. Why? Because they knew COVID was coming, okay? They knew COVID was coming. And in order to get people who support Trump to take those shots, those poison jabs, They had to have the people trust him. They had to. It was a ruse. It was a complete ruse what he did. Yep, we had a period of success. Now people who have taken the shot, who have been injured by the shot, whose family members have died by the shot, they still support Trump. And Mike King, I personally know him. I've interviewed him. He and I have gone toe-to-toe about this whole Trump Q thing. I don't buy it. It's a complete ruse. And so the problem is that when I talk like this, people get, they say, well, there's no hope. Yes, there is. There is hope. You have hope. Number one, you have Jesus Christ. Number two, you have yourself. Take care of your family. Stock up on supplies. Take care of your health. Move out of these, I don't want to call them a blue state or a red state, move out of these states like Massachusetts, which I will be as soon as I can, which we're getting flooded with invaders. That's what you can do to take over. And if you really have guts and courage, then get involved at the local level. The local level. And I don't mean by running for office, because that's not going to help, because we know that elections are rigged. People need to be held accountable at the local level. Go after the low-lying fruit. Go after your city councilors. Go after your Board of Health members. Go after these people. That if you really want to take back your country, that's how you have to do it, in my opinion.
Well, I welcome all that. I do think at local level, but we need to get a, we need to get rid of the electronic voting machines, return to paper ballots and hand counts at the minimum, have voter ID, all of which, of course, are opposed by the Democrats because they know if that were the case, they'd never win another election.
Right, but I see, I think that I don't think like that anymore. Okay, and I don't know that I ever did. But would you agree, Dr. Fetzer, that we're already a communist country? Would you agree with that?
Well, I think the Democrats would like to make that the case. I don't think we're quite there yet, but they're certainly moving us in that direction with all speed ahead.
The thing is, 1913, right, one of the first planks of communism, they established a federal central bank.
Sure.
That was 1913. And yeah, since then, think about it. Go and look at, I can't think of the gentleman's name, 1945. The 45 Goals of Communism. They were read into the congressional record by a Democrat in Florida in like 63. Go and read those 45 goals. I think every one has been accomplished except for one. So I know this sounds doom and gloom and it sounds black pill, but people need to really know what is going on in the country. Read those 45 goals and you tell me what hasn't been accomplished. They have both political parties already, right? The National Governors Association. Does people know about the National Governors Association? I don't know.
Tell
if
us.
Hear, yeah.
Go ahead. Fill us in.
The National Governors Association is an NGO. It's a non-governmental organization. Go and look it up, NGA. Look it up. I think it was 1913 or 1916, something around the early, the second decade of the early 1900s. That's an organization that tells the governors, go and look at it. It tells the governors what they're supposed to do. And so then you'll get somebody like, who's the one from Nome? What was it from? I think South Dakota.
Chomsky.
Who was the previous one? I don't know who the previous one, South Dakota, was a woman. Christy Nome or something. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
I'm pulling.
As governor, yes. She's the current governor.
Yes. The ones with the R's next to their names, they play their role. The ones with the D's, they play their role. But look, they all belong to the same organization. And if you look at every level of government, so for people who are listening and will listen, whatever state you live in, okay, I can only talk about the United States. Go and look at every level of government. You have a corresponding non-governmental organization that tells that level of government what they're supposed to do. So, for example, the clerks. You have a National Association of Town Clerks. You have a National Association of City Councilors, of Board of Health members, of Planning Board, and on, of sheriffs, of mayors, of town managers, of superintendents, of every single level of government. You have a corresponding non-governmental association that tells them what to do. That's where when you see the changes in your state, that's where they're coming from. They're not coming. These changes are not coming from the people that you think you elected. So, for example, in Massachusetts, and I always mess this name up, Massachusetts, I'll have to look it up. MASC, I think that's what it is. I'll look it up while we talk. So it is a non-governmental organization. I just put in MASC, Massachusetts Association of School Committees, right? So this organization tells the people on the school committees what they're supposed to do in their town or city, right? That's how it works. That's how the government works. But this one's Massachusetts area. I have so much in my brain. Planning Council or something. Massachusetts. Okay, I'm sorry. I always mess this up. Metropolitan Area Planning Council. You don't believe me? Look it up. Metropolitan Area Planning Council, MAPC. This non-governmental organization that's pushing Agenda 2030 and the 2050 goals, they're responsible for 101 cities and towns in Metro Boston, basically going from about the north of Boston, Gloucester, up in that area, and kind of like a semicircle down to the south of Boston. So they're responsible for 101 cities and towns. Each city and town has a representative from the Metropolitan Area Planning Council for all levels, for the Board of Health, for the Planning Board, for the Planning Commission, and they tell them what to do. Your vote doesn't matter. People can get mad at me. Dr. Fessler, you might not ever want to talk to me again. But I'm telling you, this is how they're operating. This is how they're making changes in your town and city, despite who you think you're voting for. Okay, I just said a mouthful. Did you want to chime
in? No, it's all good. That's all good. I like it all, and I like different points of view, and you're doing a great job. I certainly understand why you were so highly recommended for coming on the show, and I'm just delighted. I mean, whether I agree with you on everything is incidental. I think you're making a lot of very provocative observations confirming my introductory remarks about your agile mind.
Listen, I wish my body was as agile as my mind is. It used to be, but here's the thing, and I know, and I have to get your book on the Boston Marathon, okay? So for people who don't know me, excuse me, I grew up in Boston. In fact, I moved back to Boston, and I regret it because every single day when I drive to the office, I witness what's happening in Boston and the surrounding communities regarding Agenda 2030, okay? People can talk about the WEF and what they're doing over here and what they're doing over there. I focus on what's happening in my own city and my state, and it is horrific. But let's talk about the Boston Marathon bombing, because you wrote a book that I have to get. So I'm at a disadvantage, Dr. Fessler, because you wrote the book, you know what's in it, and I don't. But let me ask you this question, and I just found this out. Did you know that Chris Kyle, you know who Chris Kyle is?
Remember Chris who he is? Kyle, sure, sure.
The sniper, wasn't he the American sniper?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was a founder of Black Water.
His organization, whatever that organization was, they actually had boots on the ground for the Boston Marathon bombing. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. That's because, he founded Crash International.
It was
Crash International actually perpetrated, planted the bombs. They were perfunctory. They were really just for show. They weren't powerful enough to kill anybody, but they were there for theatrical effect. It was a stage event. There's some who believe Steven Spielberg was actually the director, and there are photographs that tend to support that. Plus, the opinion I have from a Hollywood producer who says it's a widely known secret in Hollywood.
Yes, and I saw some of the footage. So I was actually living in Cambridge watching it on TV, and I had thought about going down there, and then I was working on something, so I didn't, and so I watched it. But what do you know about Officer Sean Collier? Do you remember him?
This is one of the police. Say that again, Diana. I didn't quite get the word. The name.
So his name was Officer Sean Collier, Collier, and he actually worked as a police officer at MIT.
He was the one who was supposed to have been shot by Zucker.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Diana, let me give you a little background here. The Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities. Huh. They sent out a second tweet that it would take place in 1 minute in front of the library, and 1 minute later in front of the Boston Public Library, you had one of these explosions. I'm a former artillery officer in the Marine Corps, and I can assure you they weren't powerful enough to have killed anybody. For example, the second that was in the vicinity of an outdoor court, you know, wasn't even strong enough to tatter the banners. There were all these flags around right. there. They weren't even torn by any shrapnels. Plus, when the cameras zoomed in through the smoke, you saw bodies lying there, missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. Now, Dr. Day, Lorraine Day, who's an expert, ran trauma emergency for San Francisco General Hospital for 25 years, has observed, you cannot have limbs blown off by explosives and there be no blood. The blood only showed up later, right. Diane, and it came out right. of little orange duffel bags, fake blood kits that were scattered around after the fact. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. It was that bad.
Yes, and so it's interesting because I used to walk down there for 8 months. Every Saturday, I walked down there because I grew up there. I literally, right now, I live about a mile, maybe a mile and a quarter from there. So, you know, it felt personal. At the time, I thought it was real. And it's only probably been the last year or so that I've done any research into it. But somebody in the chat asked about Sean Collier. It's S-E-A-N, S-E-A-N. And there's a video. Did you ever see the video, the one, from what I understand, the lone video footage from MIT where he got assassinated, in my opinion? Do you ever see that video footage?
What? Repeat it again. Repeat it again.
There is video footage, allegedly, from the MIT campus that shows Sean Collier being... I believe he was executed. Did you ever see that video footage?
No, I've not seen that. That sounds very interesting, but I guarantee you, if he was shot, he wasn't shot by the Cernov brothers, either one.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting? And the reason this piqued my curiosity is I lived in Cambridge right up the street from where this happened. And so when I looked at the map, I said, because the Zaniah brothers, actually lived one street over from me and like two blocks away in Cambridge. We were in lockdown, the whole thing, right? Lockdown, helicopters overhead when Officer Sean Collier got executed. And I know that I was listening. I'm like, wow, something happened. You know, I go to bed. I wake up in the morning, Friday morning, and we're in lockdown, literally in lockdown in Cambridge. Can't hear a pin drop. All you could hear on this Friday afternoon in the spring were birds chirping, an occasional helicopter, and maybe a siren. So if you look at the video, okay, of Officer Sean Collier was not on the street in his cruiser. He was on a street on the MIT campus. And what you see on this video is pretend you're looking at a building right now, everybody, pretend you're looking at a building, okay? And pretend it's like, a square U, but so no top. Just pretend you're looking at two sides and the bottom, okay? So these two people, okay, walk from the right. So they come in off of the street on the right. They walk down one side of the building, across the front of the building. They take a right, and immediately that's Officer Collier's vehicle. Bang, bang. And then they escape quickly the same way they came in. Okay. So they go down. Now they're taking a left and then they're taking a left and then another left. Right. So they come up, they come straight up. They take a right. Then they take another right. They see him, shoot him, and then go back the same way. Okay. Really? How did they know he was there? How did they know he was there? They didn't stumble upon him. The people that went to go after him knew he was parked there. It's so obvious from the video. Now, what people don't know about Officer Collier is that he actually had filed a civil service complaint with against the mayor of Somerville because he was trying to get on the Somerville police force. I think he, I believe, you might have to, somebody might have to correct me from what I remember, is that he worked in the IT department at the Somerville police. And so what he did is he filed a civil service complaint against Curtatone, the former mayor. I don't think he's the mayor anymore of Somerville, but you know, another corrupt guy. My belief, what I think, is that they executed them. They used the you know, air quote Boston Marathon bombing as a way to execute Don Collier. And I think, I'm just hypothesizing, that whatever he knew from being part of the police department and having a IT type of access, I feel like he knew something, and that's why they killed him. Your thoughts?
That's extremely interesting. I find that highly plausible, given what you're telling us, Diana. Fascinating.
Yeah, and very sad. He was only 27 years old. So again, it's Sean, S-E-A-N, Collier, C-O-L-L-I-E-R. And you can look it up. And there's an article here. It's interesting. There's an article from 2018 in the Somerville/Medford News Weekly. And it's written by somebody by the name of William Toro. William Toro actually ran for mayor, I want to say like 2018. I can't remember. But I was trying to communicate with him what I just communicated with you. Right. Because in his article, the name of the article is "Was Slain MIT Police Officer Sean Collier a Victim of Somerville Manipulated Politics? The True Story." But when I was texting this William Toro, I think he thought it was enough. Because
Diana, take a deep breath. We're going to hit a break and we'll return right back with Diana Ploss. You don't want to miss a word of this.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I just add, Diana, that what I've done is pioneer collaborative research on these complex and controversial events by bringing together groups of experts. So in the case of the Boston bombing, there are about 15 contributors. So what I'm doing is giving, you know, a distillation of the results of our collaborative effort. It was, of course, banned by Amazon.com, in my opinion, functioning as an agent of the state to circumvent the First Amendment, which is a constriction on the U.S. government that won't allow them to, you know, violate our freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, freedom of protest. But they've been resorting to use private companies like Amazon to implement their will. And I'm even trying to bring a suit against Amazon. They actually banned six of my books, Diana, six.
Wow. I think Amazon is the government. I think remember at the, I don't know what you recall from where you were when we were in lockdown from COVID, but all I saw were these Amazon trucks everywhere. I remember driving, and there was a parking lot that probably had like 10 brand new Amazon trucks in it. This was probably like right after the spring of 2020, maybe going into the summer. So that was one of the things that they implemented. Now we have in for people who know Massachusetts, in Revere, there's a huge Amazon warehouse, They used COVID. To implement this. I think Amazon, I think Verizon, I think a lot of these big companies are actually government run. I do. But I'm a big conspiracy theorist. What do I know?
No, I'm all for it. You know, conspiracy theorists are investigating crimes that more often than not lead back to the government, which is why they try to stop us cold in our tracks. So you're doing the right thing, God knows.
Well, so I just want to finish up with the Boston Marathon. I mean, there's a lot to say there. So people don't know, I actually have a double master's in nursing. So when I saw some of the video footage, yeah, probably within the last year, because when it first happened, I, like everybody else, said, oh, my God, it's the Muslims, right? The Muslims are coming after us, which I now know is not the case. So that famous picture of Jeff Bauman, I'm sure you remember, in the wheelchair with Carlos Arredondo, right?
Yeah.
Going down Boylston Street. Here he is with it's so ridiculous, right? They're going down Boylston Street. He's upright, awake, in a wheelchair after being on the ground for at least 5 or 10 minutes, who knows how long, supposedly with the blood, you know, pouring out of his body. Anybody with those kind of injuries, he would have been dead in 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. He would have been dead. But yet here he is going down Boylston Street in a wheelchair while Carlos holds one of his femoral arteries with his fingers. I mean, it's laughable.
Yes.
The last thing I'll say is, people should look this up if you get a chance. There's an organization called Partners in Health. Okay, Partners in Health, 800 Boylston Street. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the bombs went off right around where they are. So this organization, they provide quality health care to people across the globe for HIV and tuberculosis. Paul Farmer, the Dr. Paul Farmer, founded it in part with the Brigham and Women's Hospital. But I don't think it's a coincidence that's where these, you know, alleged bombs went off. Because I think one of, I guess I used to think that they wanted to test the hospital systems when they had all these victims pouring in. So that goes out the window when you now know that didn't happen. But one of the big things they did is they locked us down and people let them. In 2013, they locked us down in Cambridge, Watertown, I think maybe in parts of Boston, but we couldn't leave our house. And people willingly, even myself included, numbskull, said, oh, yeah, I'd do that again. Little did I know that it was setting the precedent for what they just did in 2020. So, any other
thoughts? Well, listen, you mentioned Carlos Arredondo. I had an interview with a Hollywood director who had cast him as in one of his films, so he knew he was an actor. If you look at enough of the footage, you see he's just standing by with his cowboy hat and said, it's time for him to step into the scene.
Exactly.
You got Jeff Bauman lying there, and if you look through the smoke, you can see there's a fellow in a hoodie who is attaching a fake prosthesis with a bone extension to make the event look even more horrific. And get this, Diana, when they wheel him off, the vibrations cause the fake attachment to fall off. They have to stop, reattach, and then do it again.
And he lived. Amazing.
He lived. Days later, he's at a Boston Bruin hockey game, and he's, you know, waving a flag, and then he's throwing a ball out at a Red Sox game. Absurd. This is totally fraudulent, absolutely god-awful. And by the way, those books that Amazon bought are available, except for the Sandy Hook, which got snared in a legal thing. I'm trying to regain control at moonrockbooks.com, moonrockbooks.com. You can get 5 of the 6 books that Amazon banned.
I did see that on there. I did see that. But you know what's interesting is people, and I didn't look at this either, but so you talked about the Bruins, the Red Sox. People have to look at who owns the sports teams. The sports teams. You got to look at it. I'm not going to say it, but I have. And so if you look at the Boston Red Sox, okay, the owner of the Boston Globe owns the Boston Red Sox. His wife, I think, runs it, John Henry. Now, what's interesting about the Red Sox, and I didn't know this at the time, so I used to be a huge football fan, huge football and then baseball. I stopped watching both when they started to take the knee. I didn't realize at the time that they all belong to the tribe. That I didn't realize. But there are connections everywhere. And my belief and why people go after me so much in Massachusetts is that I believe Massachusetts is the epicenter for everything that's happening in the country. We have it all here. We absolutely have it all. And I just want to, well, let's just go back to MIT for a second, Dr. Fetzer.
Sure.
Do you know that Bibi Netanyahu went to MIT?
Did he now? No, I was unaware.
Yes, he did, Dr. Fetzer. Oh, my goodness. Let me share some info with you that you might find interesting. So, Bibi Netanyahu went to MIT, the Sloan School of Management, in the 70s. I want to say like the early to mid 70s, okay? And you know who he met there? Well, no, that's not true. He met him somewhere else. But let me just backtrack. So when Bibi was on the MIT campus, and he says this in a 2019 video, it was a conference that was in, I believe, Tel Aviv. It was a tech conference. And he talks about his time at MIT. And here's what he says, and I'm paraphrasing. I come out of the building, whatever building they were in, right? He's on the campus. And he said, you know, he was with some friends, and he pointed to a building. It was a warehouse, he said, with opaque windows. And I think that's a quote. And he said, you know, it stood out because he thought, well, why is that ugly building on the MIT campus? So he was with a couple of his friends. And they said, oh, that's NSA, CIA. Okay, that was in the 70s. Okay, now fast forward, 2015 or 16, maybe 15, Breitbart, I'm probably jumping, did an article about Hamas on the child, okay? And they were referring, and this is probably an angle I probably shouldn't have brought this in, but anyway, they did an article, Hamas on the child, and it was all about a Muslim who was a city councilor in Cambridge, right? Not the city council, you know, the city hall is not far from the MIT campus, but Americans for Peace and Tolerance, and I think it was in 2016, also did an expose on Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda base at MIT. That's what I meant to say. Al-Qaeda's base at MIT. In 2016, it was an organization run by Charles Jacobs. And he did this whole piece, expose, about how Al-Qaeda had a base at MIT. And they talk, and some of these names you might know. Siddiqui, she was a woman scientist or a PhD that was there. And supposedly she was this, you know, Al-Qaeda operative. But here's what's interesting. That was 2016. In the 70s, Bibi Netanyahu says that the CIA was on MIT's campus.
Well, there are a lot of CIA all over the place. I'm convinced Noam Chomsky is CIA, for example. And, of course, he's very prominent on the MIT campus. So, you know, some have suggested that MIT could even be a CIA-founded organization, institution. I worry about Yale, too. Yale, skeleton and bones. Yeah. I think CIA has powerful influence over Yale.
But I guess my what I didn't say, and I probably should have prefaced it. So I used to be a chapter leader of Act for America, right? Because the Muslims are out to get us, okay? And so that's what I should have said. And so here I go for 5 years, 7 years, whatever it is, thinking that Al-Qaeda had a base at MIT when in fact it was the CIA. And I think that was just a story.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
Does that make sense? So let me just keep going with Boston to tie some things together that might be of interest to you. Okay, so now Bibi Netanyahu worked for an organization called the Boston Consulting Group. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
Okay, so they're basically, I wouldn't say they're a hedge fund, but they're some sort of, they do something with money. And there are three big groups. There's Boston Consulting Group, there's Bain Capital out of Massachusetts, and there's another one, McKinsey out of, I believe, Chicago. Okay. These are Rothschild-run, they're front groups. They're global. These are global entities, and they work with money management. Okay. They're everywhere. They're all across the entire globe. Now, here's what's interesting. Bibi Netanyahu and Mitt Romney both worked at Boston Consulting Group. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Now, what's even more interesting, fast forward, because they're a little older than Mayor Michelle Wu, the current mayor of Boston. She also worked at Boston Consulting Group. Okay,
who is that who also worked there?
She's the current mayor of Boston, Mayor Michelle Wu. She's the mayor that actually put forth the COVID vaccine passport for Boston.
Okay.
So now, let's talk about Mitt Romney. Okay. Mitt Romney founded an organization called Bain Capital, which is another Rothschild front group. Okay. Now he got seed money. He got seed money from a couple of seedy characters. And believe it or not, one of those seedy characters was a guy by the name of Robert Maxwell. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Interesting, isn't it?
Go ahead.
Robert Maxwell ties to Massachusetts. Now, where was Ghislaine Maxwell when she was in hiding and they couldn't find her? She was in a yacht off the, in the Beverly, Massachusetts Harbor, up in that area, Beverly, Manchester. That's where she was.
Love it.
All these, say it again.
Love it, meaning you're making such telling points. Go ahead.
They're all connected. So now, if you go back to Boston Consulting Group, anybody can do an internet search. Boston Consulting Group put forth a 70 or 80 page plan for Boston within like the last year or year and a half, a plan to how to redesign Boston. Right? Michelle Wu, just they put their people in power. I don't care. You guys can call me the worst conspiracy theorist. Your vote doesn't matter. What does matter, if you were boots on the ground, right, putting pressure on these low-level people that only serve, they're puppets. They serve the masters. There's so much in Massachusetts. I have my whole little list here. There's so much in Massachusetts that people don't realize. Do you know? You know you were talking about Israel and Hamas. Do you know where that Israeli flag originated?
Israeli flag with the two blue lines.
Yeah. You know the blue lines and that cute little star in the middle of Moloch.
That representing the Tigris and Euphrates River. The Nile. Yeah, go ahead.
Exactly, right? So this is from the Times of Israel, December 16th, 2016. How Israel can trace its flag's roots to Boston, circa 1891. Imagine that.
Boston.
The flag of Judah paraded in Beantown 125 years ago. This was in 2016. Quickly captured the imagination of the Zionist movement. And it was from a rabbi, what's his name? Hold on a second. Rabbi Jacob Baruch Askowitz, Askowith. So he settled. He was an immigrant from Lithuania. He settled in Boston, and he designed the flag for an organization called B'nai Zion. And it bears striking similarities to the flag that we see today. But originally, I guess, in the middle of the Star of David, it contained the word Maccabee in Hebrew letters. Isn't that interesting?
It is.
So it was paraded. It was in a parade celebrating in Boston, celebrating the 400th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's arrival. So that was 100 something years ago. Imagine that.
Yep.
Imagine that. People don't realize that Massachusetts is the epicenter. People think it's New York because New York has the banks. But we got it all. We have it all here, right? We have education, big pharma, we have big tech, we have MIT, Harvard, we have big medicine, we have the military, our Federal Reserve is right here, we have the sports teams, it's all here. Very interesting things about Massachusetts, huh?
Very interesting. Good stuff here.
Did I knock your socks off yet?
I'm having a great time. I'll just say I'm so glad you were recommended to be my guest. I'm just delighted.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I'm throwing a lot at you, and it's interesting because I used to be on a program and I stopped doing it. I'm getting a lot of flack. I actually have filed a couple of lawsuits, one against the Winter Police, one against the Swampscott Police. I'm going to be filing a lawsuit soon. Against the state police, and you know, people, you can just look me up and you can see the videos. But it, long story short, right, in 2015, I saw the Muslims doing what they were doing across, you know, in France and I saw Boston, everything, and I said, oh, my God, I got to do something, right? And so Trump was the only person at the time who seemed to be the one that was going to go after the bad Muslims, right? And so I started volunteering for his campaign. And then before you know it, I was so immersed in the Republican Party in Massachusetts. And, I had the biggest Trump group. I hosted parties across the state. I mean, amazing. And so I was on the inside of all these people. And all of my naivete, because I thought, I can change the world, and it's the Republicans. They can sort this out. But I was in with them. They're no different. It's all fake. And so come, fast forward to 2019, and we're on the streets all across the all across Massachusetts having these Trump standouts. And I was so disillusioned, shocked, horrified by the behavior of the police towards us. So here we are on the streets all over Massachusetts. Back to blue. I feel like an idiot now. I feel like a fool. So here we are supporting them. Meanwhile, BLM was literally, not figuratively, literally beating up people on the Trump side. And the police stood there and did nothing. No, that's not true. What they did is they actually arrested us. One day they arrested three elderly people who got surrounded by BLM up in Swampscott. I was arrested in Plymouth. I was arrested in Plymouth after they attacked me. They arrested me. So right now, currently, I have two lawsuits I've already filed in federal court. I have another one coming. But that is what drove me, witnessing what was happening on the streets, trying to, obviously I don't have the words for it. I couldn't make sense of it. I couldn't make sense. How can this be the United States of America? And how can the police, it wasn't just in one town, it was many towns and cities where the police were literally standing down and letting these people assault us on a regular basis. They did nothing. And so then I knew it had to be something bigger than what I thought it was. I knew it had to be bigger than Democrats versus Republicans. And now I understand that it's that little country in the Middle East that controls the the whole world. So your thoughts on that, Dr. Fetzer?
They're doing their best to achieve that. Yeah, they haven't quite succeeded yet, and I hope they do not achieve their goal, because you got it exactly right. That's what they're after and what they want, and they're desperately utilizing the United States to get there, regardless of the consequences for you, me, and other Americans. We are the golden calf they intend to suck dry and chop into pieces from the mouth of Bibi Netanyahu, because that's what we do with nations we hate. So far from being our gallant ally in the Middle East, they're actually our arch enemy. The American people are simply too gullible to sort it out.
No, but what's interesting is, like I said, every member of my family, really, for the most part, all supported Trump, right? So when I was on the Trump train, they loved me. I was so loved. And now that I'm not on the Trump train, I am unloved. I am an unloved, I'm an unloved human being in Boston, Massachusetts, where all the people who supported Trump. And now, I never knew what a Christian Zionist was. I just found that out within the last 3 years. Who knew? I was a Catholic. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. Never knew what a Christian Zionist was. And then, I learned about the Scofield Bible and, all of that, which I'm sure that people who are listening know. So I was very, disillusioned. And, I just kept digging. I kept digging and digging and digging. And now I'm where I am. And I believe there's no political solution. There is no political solution. There's not a person that's going to get into office and do anything that's right by the American people, especially if they support that tiny little country. You don't get in unless you support that tiny little country. You don't. You absolutely don't. Your thoughts on that?
No. I get it. I mean, remember the pledge, you know? I mean, new members of Congress are asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel even ahead of those of the United States, and virtually every one of them signed the pledge,
exactly.
Diana.
I know.
How absurd, how outrageous is that?
It's obscene. You know, my mother came home when the war in Israel started, you know? My mother came home and said, I'm so sick about what's going on in Israel. And I just had to say, Ma, it's fake. They want you to support Israel. You're going to tell me that Israel, in my opinion, they have the most powerful military in the world. I could be wrong. You're a military guy. But we give them, how many billions of dollars a year, right? They have the Iron Dome. They train all their citizens. And you're going to tell me that Hamas is doing that much damage? I don't buy it.
Well, they're ranked as the fourth most powerful army in the world, but Hezbollah fought them to a stalemate, really regarded as an Israeli defeat in Lebanon not that long ago. And now, of course, we got the reports about how Hamas has taken out 88 armored vehicles of Israel, of some 323. I mean, it's just staggering what's going on. Hamas is putting up a hell of a fight. And I'm very, very proud and impressed by their resilience. And I think this is very, very important. Meanwhile, I'm so delighted to have you here. We're about to hit the break. We're going to open the phone lines, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will take your call. 540-352-4452 to talk to Diana Ploss and me about any of these issues or others you might want to raise. Very rarely do I have a guest who's so much fun and so articulate about so many subjects. Really enjoying having you here, Diana. I'm really enjoying it. Very nice.
Thank you, and I'll listen to the music for the break, and I'll shut up.
It's here.
I want to thank Mitchell and John. Thank you, John.
You'll be right back. We'll be right back with you.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, our first caller is a regular. We often hear from him. Brian, join the conversation with Diane and me.
Well, when I hear all this, what I always think of is Otto Kahn, who was one of the partners with Warburg and Schiff in Kuhn Loeb in 1920, whatever, who had dinner with the French ambassador. His last name was A-U-X-L-I-E-R. And he said, look, the difference between communism and fascism is in communism, the bankers control the government, which in turn control the means of production, in other words, the corporations. Yep. And in fascism, the government controls the means of production, the corporations, which in turn control the government. He said one's subjective, the other one is objective. And we always control both sides between a capitalist government and a communist government. We're the fulcrum in the middle. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's Trump or whoever, they control it all. And today I saw that because I'm on Russia Today, you know, which, they've banned Russia Today and they're talking about the same old BS. You'll never hear from Al Jazeera, Russia Today, any of these mass media anywhere in the world about 9/11, what exactly happened, or Sandy Hook, or the Kennedy assassination, or Oklahoma City. You won't hear any of it because they control it all over the world. And, you know, you said, Jim, Israel created Hamas. There was that minister that for Israel was in charge of Gaza, and he said way back when his name was Segek, some name like that, S-E-G-E, whatever, and he said, you know, we created Hamas. And then you got Yasser Arafat talking to the French media saying that, you know, Hamas is created by Israel, but of course you won't hear anyone say it. And then what really interested me is I know that the royal family of Saudi Arabia, they're Jews. They were a family named Mordecai out of Basra, Iraq. And the British intelligence, you can look up the diary of a British intelligence guy, Hemper, who talked about how they put them in charge in Iraq. And then recently discovered that Khomeini was Jewish, that Khomeini means Cohen from a certain province in Iran, and that Hezbollah is created by the Jews. So it's just a big kabuki theater we live in. So I just can't pay much attention to it. It's all controlled by them. And, you know, like poor Putin, I think he's good, but the number one talk show host in Russia, if you translate his last name to English, it's Shapiro. And then the other guy that's popular with him, his name is Satanowski. Okay, so obviously we know where they come from. And for Putin, you know, any of these governments where they've got some good, they always have the dark. And Pershigin, that Wagner Group guy, was part of Shabbat Levadovich or whatever. And he worked with Zelensky, who was also in that. And when Zelensky would send him soldiers in Bakhmut, where they would give the coordinates to Pershigin would shell them with artillery and kill them all. And then they'd put money in Pershigin's bank account for doing it, because it was a private military organization. And they really hit their poor Hungarians on the western part of the country, because if you go back and look at Stefan Banderas in World War II, they really decimated those Hungarians. So they were doing that to the Hungarians too, and that's why you got those stories about how the Russian military shut off Wagner shells, because, you know, they were disgusted by it. And that's why Pershigin was taken out. So him being gone was a good thing, because when they were talking him up, that was all through that Zionist controlled press. So, you know, something is wrong. And if you read the Shabbat rabbi, Menachem Mendel Shearson from 1992, where he gave that speech where he said, there's going to be a big war in Ukraine, and we're going to kill all those Ukrainians, both sides, and the Russians, because they're Amalek, and you can't change them, so they must be annihilated. So it all fits. I think I've ranted long enough.
No, it was good, Brian. It was good. Not a problem. Diana, go ahead. Pick up anywhere.
No, it was a very good synopsis, and it actually piggybacks on to what I was saying. And a lot of people think I'm doom and gloom, but I guess I'm a realist, right? And I think, Brian, I think you're a realist as well. You see what the situation is, and then people ask, rightly so, what can I do about it, right? What can I do about it? And what I would say to that is, get out of the system. Get out of the system. Stop participating as much as you can in the system. And one of the best ways you can do that is by taking care of your health, because then you don't have to be in the health system, right? Don't watch sports. Don't watch any of these pro sports. Don't participate. Don't gamble. Don't smoke, right? I don't want to sound like I'm telling people what to do. I'm just saying that if you want to do something, you have to start with yourself first.
Brian,
can I make a point about Mrs. Zelensky that I read about today that was really disturbing? I think her name is Elena Zelensky. Back in, I think, 2020, started this wonderful charity for children, you know, helping all the poor orphans in Ukraine. And on South Front Press today, they had a story about a guy that worked for this charity, and they had his picture on his ID from when he was working on the charity, and he was charged with dropping some of these poor orphans off at rich houses in Paris in France. And he said these rich people that were taking the children were really peculiar, and he started suspecting there was something wrong. And then he came to the conclusion that they were sexually exploiting them. And so the article talked about how the Russians had uncovered all this, and that they were very secretive about it, of course. And they were also sending those poor children to organ harvesters. So, I mean, wow. Can they get any worse than that? I mean, it's just horrendous. So that's what we're dealing with. So, and as far as the pharmaceuticals, I can tell you, I told my dumb daughter, don't get the poor boy vaccinated. I said, that's what I want for birthday present. Well, she did, and now he's autistic. And I talked to Archangel Raphael, and he said, all he needs is black seed oil, and he'll pop out of it. So I bought some for my daughter, and she looked at the label and said, do not give to children. Well, that's why it's put there, because it'll cure autism. They don't want that. So she wouldn't give it to him. And she went to, they sent her to a psychiatrist because she's got all these problems. And so anyway, they put her on these anti-anxiety drugs. And yesterday, for the first day, she didn't take them. Well, she went nuts. Okay. She started cutting on herself. I had to haul her off to the hospital. And you know, it's because that's what those kind of things do to you. And my family is just totally in the dark and doesn't do any good to talk to any of them. Yeah. So I was going to try and find the black seed oil. I was over there today because they don't want her left alone, and put it in his milk, but I couldn't find it. So anyway, you know, so that's just the world we live in.
Yeah, sorry about that, Brian. I understand. I do. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, what can you do? You bang your head against the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
And all you're going to have is a hurt head and an indent in the wall. That's it.
Yeah. I try and not let it get to me. That's all you can do.
Yeah. I know. It's not easy. Thanks so much, Brian. Thank you.
So, Brian, you're welcome to stay. I'm surprised. I thought we'd have a whole list here because Diana is such a fascinating guest. You're welcome to add further thoughts, Brian.
Well, I can tell Diane that what I do is I do these meditations twice a day. I've talked about them, and you get better discernment. That's where a lot of what I get comes from. I mean, I was asleep like everybody else, but if you do those twice a day, it kind of aligns your soul, which is truth, with your ego mind, and then you start getting better discernment on things. So that's where mine comes from.
Somebody in the chat wrote, all these conspiracy theorists know it alls. Yeah, I don't know that I know it all. I think that I see very clearly what's going on. And Brian, this might interest you. So I'm actually I help people who with an attorney. I help people across Massachusetts who have lost their job because they wouldn't take the COVID shot. Their employer wouldn't honor their religious or medical exemption. And it's interesting because I used to be a nurse, right? So I have a double master's in nursing. I have a master's degree in psychiatric nursing, Brian. So I understand what you're talking about with your daughter. And I used to believe, pre-COVID, I used to believe that the vaccines were good. And now I know for sure, like you talked about with your daughter, that these vaccines, I know 100%. So call me a conspiracy theorist, call me a know-it-all. Vaccines cause autism, and they cause a lot of other problems, not just autism. And vaccines, in my opinion, Dr. Fetzer, give me your opinion on this, but I think that all the vaccines do is cause us medical conditions down the road so they can keep us in this medical system. So it causes the cancer, the ALS, the Parkinson's, other neurological problems down the road that keep this money machine going for the medical industry.
Yeah, yes, I can agree. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Let me bring in Mitchell. Mitchell, I'm sure, has thoughts about all of the above. Mitchell, join the conversation with Brian and Diana and me. Mitchell, are you there, my friend? You might have had to step aside. Diana, just give us your thoughts about any of the other subjects on your mind.
Oh, so I just, a couple of things, and Dr. Fetzer, if you tolerated me enough and you want to have me back again, I just, I could spend hours talking about Trump, but I was there on January 6th. The FBI came to my house. In fact, the FBI is still looking to get in touch with me as recently as just a couple of months ago. But I was there on January 6th, and I was at the mall, and I just want to let you know, I've never heard another person say this, what I saw that day. When we were walking down, I think I was on Constitution Ave, before we got to the Capitol, a flare went up in the sky. Have you ever heard anybody mention that, Dr. Fetzer?
The witch went up in the sky?
A flare.
A flare. Where are we talking about?
So we were in D.C. walking from where Trump had just spoken at the end of his speech. And we were probably
at the ellipse, speaking at the ellipse. Yes.
Yes. And then I think I was on either Constitution Ave or Independence Ave or Madison, one in there walking towards the Capitol. Right. And a flare went up in the sky. So this is before I got to the Capitol. Yes. And I have not heard another person mention that. But
I've not heard that either. But that could easily have been the signal to start a protest for all the FBI assets who were in the crowd.
Yes, and so we walked down there. There were millions of people, and people were so peaceful, singing, happy. You never saw such happy people in your life. Now, when I got to the Capitol, I didn't go inside. I wasn't on that side of it that faced the Supreme Court, so I was on the lawn side, and I was on the Capitol. I've said this before. I never went in the Capitol. But I can tell you, as God is my witness, everything there was peaceful. Now, there was one little area that you could see that now looking back that was staged. But for the most part, most people didn't even see it. But for the most part, these were very, very peaceful, loving people. Lots of elderly people. Oh, elderly. I mean, I just turned 60, but elderly, you know. People in their 70s. People in their 70s up on the Capitol. And once they started to tear gas us and flashbang us, that's when all hell broke loose. Maybe that was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But anyway, I saw older people trampled by the police, trampled. So anyway, that's just, something else that's on my mind. I guess the last thing I wanted to mention is, and you said this at the very beginning of the program when you were talking about what's going on. I believe you said it. Christian persecution. People don't realize that Christians are being persecuted in the United States of America right now, today. Today, the majority of people in Massachusetts who I work with, majority, like 99%, 99.5% of the people who lost their jobs and their religious exemptions were denied were Christian. They were Christian. This is Christian, in my opinion, Christian persecution. It's ongoing right now in the state of Massachusetts. And if you look to see what they're doing in the courts and what they're doing, at Mass General Hospital, in the government agencies, they are pushing out religious exemptions for people to be exempt from vaccines. So just watch for that. It's happening right now. Right now. Your thoughts on that, Dr. Fetzer?
Yeah, I love it. Brian, your thoughts?
Well, I wanted to talk about, I told you in past shows, and she'll find this interesting. I had a girl when I would go do my Kundalini yoga chakra dhyana, and she was attending, and she showed up beaten by her boyfriend, and she lost her job from the COVID thing. She was from South Carolina, had no money. And I said, look, you can move in at my house. I've got a spare bedroom, and, we'll get you on your feet. Well, when she got here, she discovered she was pregnant. So I was with her until, 6 months of the pregnancy, and then she finally went home and lived with her mother. But she would not allow that child to have any vaccines, wouldn't even allow them to have baby food because there's poisons in baby food. and when she was pregnant, she would not take the mainstream prenatal vitamins, okay? And then they even tried to give her a vitamin K shot at the end. That's like their last yep. line of defense. And she said, fuck you.
No, good for her. So do you know, but, Brian, I don't know if you know this, babies within 12 hours of birth, either 12 or 24 hours of birth, they give them a hepatitis B shot. Do you know this? Most people don't know.
Yeah, but she,
hepatitis B.
Yeah, she would not, she went to one of these natural birthing places and said absolutely no vaccine. It wasn't a regular hospital. And then afterwards, they even left the baby on the umbilical cord for a certain length of time because the baby gets immunity protection from the mother before they cut the cord. And, right. you know, they did everything right. And this boy now, he'll be 3 in on St. Valentine's Day. And he is so much more active, intelligent. I mean, people in this country don't even know what a real child is supposed to be like.
No, I know.
I mean, the difference, you know, he's so articulate. He's so intelligent. I mean, it's she has people talking about it all the time. You know, I talk to her practically every day, and she sends me pictures. And, you know, they'll comment on it. They'll say, my God, what's with this child? And it's because she raised him the right way so far.
You know, it's interesting, and I would encourage people, set up a Google alert. Set in your Google alert to Pfizer or Moderna, by the way, which are in Massachusetts, right? The Johnson & Johnson was developed in Massachusetts, COVID shots at Beth Israel Lahey Hospital. But put in your Google alerts, and you want to know what you're up against and what you're going to be facing, because I think it was a month or maybe longer, September maybe, they're now giving babies, infants, newborns, the RSV vaccine. The RSV vaccine, it was approved by, I think, the FDA. And of course, the CDC is rah-rahing right behind that. But think about what they're doing now. And I know it's difficult to look at these things, and it's easier to look away from these things. But people need to know what's going to hit them. And so, they're giving, and I see them in the Google alerts, and I talk to people all the time because that's what I do. And they're giving women in their third trimester an RSV shot. And for people who don't know what that is, RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. And it's a virus, and, you know, I'm air quotes for virus, that affects very young children, I think less than 2 years old. But now what they're doing is they're pushing this shot on the elderly. And if you look at their own statistics from the CDC, they'll tell you that the mortality for infants with RSV mainly occurs in third world countries. So then you have to ask yourself, why are they pushing this? Why are they pushing this in the United States? So if you have a baby in a hospital, that baby is very likely within 12 hours of its birth to get a vitamin K shot, like Brian said, to get a hepatitis B vaccine, shot number one. They'll have two more after that. And then to get a shot for RSV. So think about that. So if you want to know what to do about it, share that information with people, because we're going to have, like we already have, generations of people that are damaged by these vaccines.
Yeah. I mean, go more on COVID. I know you've been spending so much time on it. This is just wonderful. Go.
No, so COVID, and so people, Massachusetts is the epicenter. So let me just say this, right? And I know when I open my mouth, it puts my life in danger. It really does. So Beth Israel Lahey, where the Johnson & Johnson vaccine was developed with Dr. Dan Baruch, okay? Johnson & Johnson, that was the one dose. You get one dose. Many people lost their jobs who worked at the hospital, nurses, right? Their religious exemptions were not honored. Well, the CEO of Beth Israel Lahey, his name is Kevin Tabb. Kevin Tabb went to Israel when he was 18 years old, and he served in the IDF. He served in the IDF. Now, the leader, the CEO of Mass General, I don't know if she served in the IDF, but she's also a member of the tribe. And a lot of people at Mass General, they lost their jobs when their religious accommodations, their religious exemption was not honored. So I'm working with people who are involved in litigation regarding the termination of their jobs, but it's directly related, in my opinion, to, you know, multiple things, right? Religious persecution. A lot of these people are over 40. So age discrimination, they wanted to get these people out of the workforce. But you also have an element of people who are trying to destroy our society. And people need to start asking questions at the local level, at the local level. People need to know what's happening in their cities and towns. In Boston, right, the streets are being narrowed. They're taking lanes out, right? So if there were four lanes, now it's two lanes, and you got the bike lanes. Buildings are going up faster than you ever saw in my lifetime anyway. Apartment buildings are going up in places that you never thought you would see an apartment building. Lightning quick.
We talked about that here in Kansas City. I'm sorry. Exactly the same thing. It's the buildings, the apartments you see in the old Soviet Union. I've got one down the street they just put up, and I call it the new Bakhmut from Bakhmut, Ukraine, that had all those apartments. And right in front of my house, I had four lanes of traffic. Now I've got two lanes and bike lanes, and I live in the hood. No one's on a bike here. You get shot. Okay.
Right.
So, you know, you say to yourself, what the hell do we have bike lanes here? No one's on a bicycle. It's too dangerous. You know, but yeah, I absolutely get it. It's everywhere. And Paul from California calls into Dr. Fetzer, and he sees the same thing there. So anyway, yeah, they're communists, and that's what they were doing in communist Russia, and now it's here.
Yeah, no, it's here. And Boston is it's horrific. As somebody who grew up here, it is horrific. Just last week, I went to is it time to go?
I cannot thank you enough for coming on, Deanna. This has just been sensational. And Brian, thanks for a wonderful call.
Thanks, Dr. Fetzer.
Everyone, spend as much time as you can with your friends, those you care about and love the most. We do not know how much time we have left.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their